Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Open Mic Session. Today's topic is out-of-memory issues in WebSphere application server. My name is Joseph Lam, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's Open Mic session, we will start off by introducing to you our panel of experts for the day. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to out-of-memory issues in WebSphere application server. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us through email. Then, we will open the lines for a live Q&A period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of the Open Mic session. Moving on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like to introduce to you our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of Giri Parakusham, WebSphere Application Server Support Engineer.
Hello there. I've been part of WebSphere Support for 7 years now, specializing mainly in SDK issues such as performance, out of memory, and crashes.
Thank you, Giri. Next, we have James Fox, WebSphere Application Server Support Engineer.
Hello. I've been with WebSphere Application Server Support distributed for 6 years, mostly specializing in SDK issues as well.
Thank you, James. Then we have Jingwu Wong, WebSphere Application Server Support Engineer.
Hello, everyone. I've been with the WebSphere Application Server Support for 7 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Jingwu. And finally, we have Thomas Irriton, WebSphere Application Server Support Engineer.
Hi, thanks, Joseph. This is Thomas. I've been with WebSphere Support for 7 years, working on the same topics as the other folks, mostly out of memories and hangs. Thanks.
Thank you, Thomas. Now, before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, and please go ahead, Giri.
Thank you, Joseph. Welcome to the open mic session. Today, we'll be focusing on out-of-memory issues in WebSphere. First, we will discuss the symptoms of Java heap out-of-memory and native heap out-of-memory and how to verify if it's a heap sizing issue or a true memory leak. We'll also go over the must-gather documentation required to debug these out-of-memory issues. Next, we'll talk about heap analyzer tool and how to find leak suspects in a heap dump. Moving on to slide 5, please. For native memory issues, we will discuss the various steps involved in isolating the issues. Lastly, we'll also talk about some of the common memory suspects in WebSphere environment that you should be aware of when dealing with Java heap and native memory issues. Moving on to slide 6, I'll give this back to Joseph.
Thank you, Giri. We will now begin our question and answer session with questions that were pre-submitted to us before the webcast. We have a total of 7 pre-submitted questions today. I'll now hand the presentation over to our panel of experts, and we are currently on question number 1 on slide number 6.
Thanks, Joseph. So in the first question, they're seeing out-of-memory errors in WebSphere, and where do they start? How do I determine if an OOM memory error are due to a Java heap exhaustion or a native memory exhaustion? Next slide, please, number 7. So as the end of the question specified, it's very important to know which type of memory we're running out of when we get an out-of-memory error. Is it the Java heap memory running out, or is it the native memory running out? So to find this out, we need the verbose garbage collection trace, the verbose GC data. So what we'll do with this is we'll look at the garbage collection cycle just prior to the out-of-memory error. The garbage collection cycle will tell us if the object was allocated or not. If the object was allocated successfully, then we know it wasn't a heap issue. If the object did not get allocated successfully, then we'll know that it was a heap issue. So we've got a little fragment of some verbose GC data there. So the two things we want to look at is the very last tenured free byte section in the red at the bottom, and that's the amount of memory left free after the whole garbage collection and allocation has been performed. The red tenured free bytes just above that is the amount of free space we have after the garbage collection. So if the numbers are different, so the numbers of memory after the garbage collection is different than after the allocation failure, we know that the object was allocated because it took that space that's different. If they're the same, then we know the object did not get allocated. If it did not get allocated, then we have a heap issue. So in our example here, the free bytes are the same after the garbage collection and after the allocation, so we know the object didn't get allocated. Now, if we look up at the blue line, it will tell us how many bytes were requested for that object. And we can see it was like 50 megabytes, which is a big object. So that's not a surprise that that caused a heap out of memory. So next slide, please, number 8. Now, if we don't have verbose GC, sometimes we can tell if we're actually seeing a native memory issue. Sometimes there'll be messages in the native standard error, so we can look for any of the messages that are in this list. You know, anything that says you cannot create any more threads, any malloc or calloc errors, those indicate native code allocating memory, or if you cannot allocate memory for initialized heap. So any of those messages, you see them in your native standard error, you are seeing a native memory issue. Also, if you have a Java core that was thrown from the out of memory error, if the message on it is failing to create a thread, either fork an OS thread or to create a thread, then we're pretty sure it's out of memory. This one is not guaranteed because we actually may have a tremendously high number of threads. So if you've got like 20,000 threads, you may see this message due to actually too many threads. But almost all the time, it indicates a native memory issue. Okay, next slide, number 9, please.
Thank you, Thomas. Question number 2. And now that we have identified the type of memory errors, what documentation should we collect? Moving on to slide 10. Verbose GC trace provides crucial information for debugging both Java heap and native memory issues. First, I'll go over the must-gather data required to debug Java heap issues. Verbose GC needs to be enabled prior to the out-of-memory event, and this requires an app server restart. For IBM platforms, the verbose GC output is written to native standard error.log. When I refer to IBM platform, it means IBM SDK running on AIX, Windows, and Linux operating systems. For Sun and HP platform, the verbose GC is recorded in native standard out.log. The tech note, enabling verbose GC in WebSphere application server explains the steps involved in enabling verbose GC for different operating systems and various versions of WebSphere, including DManager, App Server, and Node Agent. On a Java heap out-of-memory event, a Java core and a heap dump is automatically created, and their location is recorded in the native standard error.log. Whereas for Sun and HP platforms, these are not automatic. You will have to set up a JVM flag called heap dump on out of memory to generate one. If the heap dump analysis shows a lot of objects such as root objects or prim2 objects, we may have to get a system code file to trace which code is responsible for these objects. Here are the must-gather links for different operating systems. The first one is for IBM platform, AIX, Linux, and Windows. The second one is for Solaris and HP. Moving on to slide 11, please. Coming to native memory issues, the very first step we do is to track process size to see if it is growing over a period of time. We do that by collecting PS output of the WebSphere process at regular intervals. We have a separate script for each operating system. Based on the time interval, these scripts collect the process data for the entire duration of the run. In addition, request system code files and operating system-specific data. For example, for AIX, we collect SVMON output to see which segments are full. For Linux, we collect a top output. For Windows, sometimes we may suggest a Microsoft debugging tool called UMTH to track the native leak. Here are the must-gather links for the native memory issues on different operating systems. The first one is for AIX, then Linux, Windows, and for Solaris. If none of the above steps help, in some rare cases, we'll have to collect malloc traces to track the native memory allocation. But this is very intrusive, and we'll try to avoid that. Moving on to slide 12, please. Here are some useful links that are very handy when debugging, especially Java heap issues. For example, if you want to manually trigger heap dumps at regular intervals to compare the growth of memory, the first TechNode will help you. And that is for IBM platform. The second one is for Solaris. Or in some cases, if you want to identify the source code that's responsible for some large object requests like 20 MB or more, this TechNode will be very handy. Just to note, this feature has been added to 1.5 SDK very recently, starting SR10, and you have to be at that level. And more details on the versions is provided in the link. Moving on to slide 13.
Okay, question number three. How do I debug Java integration issues, and what tools should we use? Page 14, please. To debug a Java heap exhaustion issue, a heap dump needs to be analyzed usually. Java heap is one of the Java runtime data area of Java Virtual Machine, where all class instances and arrays are allocated and also shared among all Java Virtual Machine threads during the execution of Java Virtual Machine. A Java heap dump is just a snapshot of a Java heap and class information at a specific time. And there are a couple of Java heap analysis tools available, and you can choose any tools you prefer. Page 15, please. IBM Heap Analyzer is one of the most popular Java heap analysis tool since 2003. It's almost seventh birthday of Heap Analyzer around the corner. It can analyze all kinds of Java heap dump formats provided by Sun or HP, and most of the Java heap dump formats provided by IBM. It is powered by object query engines and patent-pending heuristic analysis algorithms. You can just load Java heap dumps and check out list of Java heap leak suspects in the tool. After years of IBM's research, different kinds of Java heap leaks patterns have been discovered. The patterns are modeled inside of IBM Heap Analyzer, so it can detect these different types of memory leaks and find the leak suspects for you. So we have these four types of features from Heap Analyzer, and we have more features available. So let me talk about just a couple of basic leak patterns. The first one is horizontal memory leak, where many objects are referenced from same type of object. Second pattern might be the vertical memory leak, where many objects are linked together, like a linked list. A third one would be diagonal memory leak, which is combination of the horizontal and the vertical memory leak. It's mostly found in tree structures or patterns. If you need more information about the memory leak patterns, please check out the article Unveiling the Java Lang Out of Memory Error, available at the Developer Works Journal. You can find the link of the article from Heap Analyzer homepage on page 14. Okay, let's move on to question 4, page 16, please.
Hi, thanks, Janu. So question 4 is, how do I debug native memory exhaustion issues, and what tools do I use? So next slide, please, 17. Okay, debugging native memory issues can be a very lengthy process. There's no real way of finding out which code allocated the native memory that's being used. So So what we have to do is go through the list of each potential native memory users, disable them, until we find the one that's causing the issue. It's like just trial and error. We'll try one. If it worked, then that was the one that was using the native memory. If it didn't work, then we have to go on to the next step, see what is the next thing to try out. So there's a little link at the bottom of this page which goes to one of our tech notes which has some of the most common ones and our first steps in the native issue. Next slide, please, number 18. So here are the four first steps for native memory that are on that last tech note page. The first thing we want to check for 32-bit systems only is the maximum heap size. This is the most common problem with native memory issues, is that the heap is encroaching on the native memory address space. If the heap size is too large, that leaves a very little amount of memory left for native. So the way to increase the native memory is by decreasing the max heap. So for 32-bit, we try and keep it at either 15, 36 meg or smaller for the heap size. Our step two is a direct byte buffer, which is used for sending data back to the user. The response data comes back. This can be very high native memory use, and we can change it back to the synchronous way by just setting a property, just a Java property in the web container, and then we'll fix that one. Our step three is another direct byte buffer, but it's being used by some of the WebSphere native code. There's a native library in WebSphere with AIO for asynchronous output, and all we have to do is rename that library, and that'll disable that. And our fourth most common step is with thread pools. Some of the WebSphere thread pools default to variable size. This means they can grow and shrink, grow and shrink, grow and shrink. When the threads are destroyed, if any objects are still pointing to the thread local data for that thread, those objects cannot be garbage collected. So what happens is you get a buildup of thread local objects that have no thread, so you cannot access them, but they still take up memory. And a lot of the thread local objects will have socket information in them, which is actually stored in native. So setting a fixed size thread pool is quite a common way of fixing out a native memory issue. So next slide, please, number 19.
Thank you, Tom. Question 5 asks, what are some of the potential memory suspects in the WebSphere environment I should be aware of when dealing with Java heap and native memory issues? Next slide, 20, please. From a heap perspective and from our experience, the most common heap-type issues that we have when looking at this via heap dump analysis are going to be session data usage. But this includes both the size and number of the sessions. It's not uncommon for our customers to have quite a small session pool, but each of those session objects contain, 50 meg or sometimes even larger worth of data. So even if you only have 20 of those, that's quite a significant impact on your heap. One other potential is that the session objects are small, but there's just a very high number, like several thousands or more. You can change the number of sessions by configuring that in WebSphere, but the session sizes would have to be done via the application code itself. The next thing that we see quite frequently is Dynacache. And obviously, when we're looking at the heap and we see that there's a Dynacache issue, the next step would be to reduce the maximum number of items that are cached. There's a nice feature in WebSphere 7.0 where we can now limit the cache size in megabytes, as opposed to the number of items cached, which makes this management much easier. The next thing that we'll see is, of course, application code, and we'll see this during the heap analysis. And what we see is generally going to be collections, such as hash maps, and what we'll do is we'll look to see who owns that application code and understand if this is the expected size, if the number of entries and the size of those entries is what the application expects. And all of this is done via heap analysis. Next slide, please. From a native memory usage perspective, as Tom had just mentioned, there's our most common one is the maximum Java heap settings, and that's where on a 32-bit process the addressable space needs to be shared between heap and native. Not such an issue with 64-bit systems, but, you definitely pass a point of diminishing return if you make the process too large. As Thomas mentioned also, we have the AIO native libraries. We have switching, you know, the async sync for web container response data. Another common one is JDBC type 2 drivers, which are JNI code, or they use native libraries as opposed to the type 4 JDBC drivers. And then we have garbage collection of unused classes, as Thomas mentioned, the thread pool settings. And also on Java 5 and Java 6, the JVMs load classes into native memory, so if there is a class loading leak, it'll show up in native memory. Not very common, but that can occur. For all of these, the actual steps to debug these from a native perspective, as Thomas mentioned, can be quite intrusive. So what we'll recommend is simply changing, you know, removing, going from async to sync, or switching from a type 4 to a type 2 driver, and then studying the impact that has on the process. Next slide, please.
All right. Thanks, James. So question 6. We have had success turning off AIO on AIX and have observed no performance issues. What type of performance issues should we be looking for? Next slide, please, 23. Well, it depends. Different applications are going to have different impacts. Different loads are going to cause different impacts as well. Applications that write very small response data and have a very high volume of users tend to do well with the AIO. Applications that have large response data, you know, maybe Excel spreadsheets or PDF files attached on the way back, tend not to do so well. Most real-world apps are somewhere in the middle, and so while you may get a little bit of a performance hit on your smaller ones, you're going to get better response than your larger ones, so you'll probably not notice any performance difference at all. And this is probably why the person who had the question didn't notice any performance difference at all, because, you know, some of the requests would have been a little slower with the AIO removed, but others would have been a little quicker. So the AIO libraries can also have a native footprint issue. They can use a lot of native memory depending on how fast the sockets are back to the users. If you've got a lot of data going back to the users and it's going slow over the network, that response data will build up in native memory until the transfer has been complete. So sometimes we'll want to disable the AIO and the async just to stop that native memory growth. It's not an actual leak or anything, but if the channels are slow, we can't afford to build up all the data in memory while it's being transferred. So next slide, please, 24.
Thank you. Question 7 asks, I am developing a solution for monitoring WebSphere application servers. I use an admin client program to monitor for things like web container hung threads, data source waiting threads, etc. Is there any way to detect if there has been an out-of-memory exception thrown? The person asking this question does say that they realize a script could check for heap dumps or check native standard error logs, but they're looking for something that can be checked from a client program using something like JMX or PMI interface. Next slide. We did look around. We don't deal as much with development of monitoring tools as we do with the actual defect support of the product, but I did find that starting in Java 6, the JVM TI, which is the JVM tool interface, which is, I guess, supposed to replace the JVM PI interface for monitoring the JVM, can capture out-of-memory errors. I listed a couple of them. There's Java Heap, as well as OOM error exhausted, as well as there's another one for that would help with detecting some native memory issues for when it can't spawn or create a new thread as well. This, of course, would require that you write a native library to interface with this JVM TI, but this would probably be one of the better profiling options that you'd have if you're looking at that level of JVM monitoring. We've also included a link to the JVM tool interface API and reference docs at the bottom. And I believe that's the last question. So as we move on to the next slide, I'll hand this over to Joseph.
Thank you, James, and thank you to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for a live Q&A period.
Our first question comes from Herman Huber. Your line is open.
Hello, thank you. Thanks for the presentation. It was interesting, like always. But I have one more question, which is, an ongoing problem for me, not really during runtime, but during the planning phase for an application. If we have to size memory for the application servers, we size the heap sizes, but there is always an uncertain part about the native memory overhead of the JVM processes. What is a fair rate to start with? So they say, okay, I have 4 gigabyte heaps, how much native memory I should add to estimate the process size? Is there any rule, any recommendation we should minimum add to the heap size to ensure that they have sufficient memory in the box?
Hi, Herman. Thanks. That's a very tough call because we don't know how much native memory is going to be used by the app server or by the application. It's going to depend on so many things that it makes it kind of random. So the only real way to do is to plan your heap use and then hope that the native memory left over will be sufficient. If it isn't, then we have to look at ways at reducing the native memory footprint. And we can do that by, you know, disabling AIO, disabling async, that kind of stuff. But there's no real way you're going to be able to plan and estimate how much native memory it's going to be using.
Is there something like a minimum memory footprint we should calculate for?
Well, I like to go with, you know, an initial heap size of 1,024 meg, you know, a gigabyte, and then leaving, you know, 700-800 meg for native, and then run the application through a load test and see how it does. You may need to increase the heap, which would then be decreasing the native, but that's what you're just going to have to try with a load on and actually see what the native requirements are. The heap can probably estimate somewhat accurately by knowing, you know, how much memory each request is going to take and how many requests you're going to get per minute. But the native, you're not going to be able to estimate near as easily.
Again, this is Giri here. Just to add to what Thomas just said, typically the heap usage depends upon your application. For example, if you're connecting to the database using Type 2 driver, you need to take that into account. And say if your application is dependent on a vendor application like Documentum or Content Manager, you need to consider those factors as well. But the rule of thumb, like the ballpark range, I would say, is heap plus 500 to 700 MB as a baseline to start your test.
How much?
500 MB to 700 MB, and then start your baseline test, and based on that, what's the memory growth, and then increase it. Again, there are a lot of factors that depend, but I'm just giving you a baseline depending on your application load. For example, again, JDBC driver, Documentum, or Content Manager. Again, that's a good start, I would say.
Right. And this is James. I think if you asked each of us that same question in the room, you might get a little bit different answers just based on, you know, our experiences as well as, you know, how conservative we are as far as from a planning point of view. I can definitely agree with both Yuri and Tom. I think 500 to 700 meg is a good place to start. Now, are you talking about a 32-bit process or a 64-bit process?
Well, actually, I'm talking mainly about 64-bit, meanwhile, because we tend to use 64-bit as compressed references.
Okay, and with the compressed references, you do say, but that's another thing to take into consideration, is that if you're looking at using a 64-bit without compressed references, of course, the address pointers are larger, so the native footprint is larger. So with a 64-bit with compressed references, I tend to lean more towards the 700 meg, or just account for a 700 meg for your process size. And then, you know, if need be, there is some tuning that can be done to bring that down.
Okay, because, you know, my dilemma here is, know about the approach to load test and evaluate. But when you load test, you already have the systems, and usually you have to give the first estimation before ordering the systems. That's my dilemma I have opened on.
I agree. I think that in that case, I would be as conservative as possible and just go towards the higher range and look at around 700 meg. And like we said, if you have a high number of threads, if you're using Type 2 drivers, if you have JNI code, just kind of add to that number as needed.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Jabril Said. Your line is open.
My question is, on your WebSphere console, is it best practice to, is it advised to have your heap size initial and maximum not within those boxes, but within the generic JVM arguments?
Now, we always like to see them in those boxes.
Correct.
Because we're never going to be sure which one is going to win. WebSphere will put what's in those boxes to the those parameters you're talking about, the XMS and XMX. But then what will happen is there will be two XMXs passed into the JVM, and we're not going to be sure which one it actually is. I think
right.
I think the last one wins, but I'm not positive. So if we only have the max heap set in the field and not in the generic arguments, then we'll know which one's being used.
So if you were to, within WASP admin script, if you were to list your JVM settings, you won't be able to see whatever is in the JV the generic arguments if you don't have any within the initial heap size boxes, right?
Now you'll still see them because WebSphere actually takes those values and creates JVM parameters to pass into the app server startup.
Right.
So you'll still see those parameters there.
But what would you suggest that should I leave the generic argument that has this djava dot headless true, and then I have my initial and the maximum heap size there, or put them down at the top where you would have your boxes, the two boxes?
Yeah, I'd leave your headless one there, but move your XMS and XMX ones, delete them out of the generic arguments, and put
right.
them in the fields.
Good answer. Thank you, sir.
And by the way, which operating system is this?
This is Linux. It's just the reason why this was done was we're using a, well, there is a third-party software that uses this.
I mean, there's another way to check what exactly the Java process is picking up the value. You can take a Java code, and it will show you the values.
Oh, just to take a heap dump, Java core, and then, okay. But as your colleague has suggested, it's best practice to put them into where they belong, which is initial heap size box and the maximum heap size box, right?
Correct. And when we build the command line to start the WebSphere instance, it'll be passed the same way. It's just cleaner to do it instead of putting it in duplicate places, and for future maintenance and administration, it's cleaner to put it where it belongs.
Mm-hmm.
Third-party apps should, like I said, it's almost identical to adding it as a generic JVM argument. It's going to be on the command line. You're still going to see the XMS and XMX on the command line when you query for JVM properties or anything like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
It still should be able to read it, even if it's put in that box as opposed to the generic.
I totally agree. But my dilemma is I don't know how this third-party app will react if I were to remove those generic JVM arguments from where they are right now. So I don't know how this third-party will react. That's my dilemma. So that's why I left it there, and things are working right now. But as best practice, I knew they had to be put in where they belong. But nevertheless,
yep, correct.
We'll test it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question comes from Vincent Felice. Your line is open.
Yes, you mentioned session sizes, and you've seen them as high as 50 megabytes. What are you seeing for typical session sizes out there?
Generally, typically they're well under 1 meg. It's, you know, we see all sorts of stuff, of course, but definitely typically it's under 1 meg.
Typically, the purpose of the HTTP session is to store the state, not to cache something. So you got to limit the contents being stored in the HTTP session.
Right. And I think that comes from, I think people implementing or using the sessions for a little bit more than what they were intended for by storing a lot more application data in there than they are state data. So, now, that being said, it is possible to have 50 meg sessions. You just have to plan for it, and that may include scaling to multiple JVMs if you, get to too large of a process size.
Right. Thank you.
Huh?
question comes from Balanand Pini. Your line is open.
This is Balanand Pini. I have two questions for you. I am reading a white paper submitted by Peter, who is a Sun certified from Dutch Bank as a business consultant. And he has written a small write-up on a new enhanced features of core Java enhancements. And he mentions that in addition to the new JVM options that come along with Java 6, it allows you to run a script when the heap is full. What script is he talking about, do you know?
I think he might be referencing xdump or xtrace. I'm not familiar with exactly with what he's saying, but we can on events like on a Java running out of memory, we can run a script or we can trigger an event to do something. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not familiar with what script he's referencing. If it is there, which it very well may be, we're just not familiar with it. The JVM diagnostics guide should reference it.
Okay, then my question is that within the Java 6, when there is a out-of-memory issue, there's a new feature with the Java 6 that it dumps out a full stack trace, which was not available in the prior versions, and it was explained that within that full trace, it does give point to the objects which are filling the JVM. Is it a true statement?
As far as actually seeing the object data itself, is that what you mean?
Yes, please.
And where are you seeing that? Is it in native standard error log or system out log?
Or in the heap dump, is what you're saying.
The thing is that within the system out dot log, where it says the out of memory issue, it says that it prints out the full stack trace in Java 6, giving pointing to the objects.
Are you seeing this in the WebSphere system out log, Balanand?
No, basically, I'm looking at the documentation of the Java 6. So there it says in the WebSphere documentation that it's a new feature in Java 6 that whenever there's an out-of-memory issue, it prints out the whole full stack trace pointing to the objects.
Okay, here is the thing. That might be quite misleading. That just happened to be executing at the time of out-of-memory. But that doesn't mean that's the culprit, because the heap might have been already full, and when you request the JVM to allocate an object, it just says there's not enough memory. That would be more useful if you are looking at a current thread for a hung messages in the system out. We do have that feature. That would be more useful. But from an out-of-memory perspective, I don't think it's going to be that effective.
Well, and I believe that's always been there in the Java cores anyway, the current thread that where the out-of-memory triggers, which is the current thread in the Java core itself, which was useful back in the days when we had fragmentation, but I'm not sure if...
Again, there are two things that we need to differentiate here, Balanand. One is a thread stack, and the other one is the object tree structure. And for a out-of-memory issue, you would be interested in the object tree structure, not the thread stack.
Okay. My final question is, we use ISA. I use IBM ISA tool normally to check at the thread stack. What are you talking about? That stack thread stack, where it tells you what is the size of the object. It also tells you how many child objects are there. So what happened recently is that some of the heap dumps I was analyzing, it gave negative error, some negative size error. So I was looking for some tools which I can use with Java 6. I was just Googling over the web. So that I can use with the existing Java binaries which are installed with WebSphere. And I know for the Linux and Sun, they were talking about JMAP, where you can run the JMAP trace against a heap dump, and it will give you, instead of giving a GUI interface, it will give you a histogram output. As per your experience or anything, if it is an IBM or if it is a Linux, suppose there are two operating systems, which is the tool would you prefer, which is the simplest way, not a GUI method, but something like you can run it on a command line. Is there any tools, do you know?
Balanand, first I would like to break this into two-part questions. The first one, you said you're getting some exceptions when using a tool within ISA. Which tool in particular are you talking about?
MDDJ.
Oh, MDD4J. Okay, I would say that you stay away from that. There are much better tools with new, logic and API. I would my first recommendation would be Heap Analyzer, and if you see that there are a lot of root objects, then we may get a system dump and use MAT.
But the I think the question, he's looking for static analysis.
Right. Now, the second question is, you made a reference to JMAT. I mean, this is a future part of Sun JDK, but I heard you say you're using Linux.
Basically, what happens is we are using some of the applications that are on Linux, and I was going through the documentation of JMAP. They said it's available only on Sun and Linux.
Correct. If you're using a Sun JDK on Linux, then you can use JMAP. But if you're using an IBM JDK that is shipped with WebSphere running on Linux, then you can't use JMAP.
But the benefit of JMAP is not very high. It's a static analysis, and it'll give you a histogram of the objects and their total size and their total count, but it doesn't give you any idea of the parent-child relationship and who actually holds that. So what you'll find is byte and car take up the majority of your heap, and then, you know, other typical objects like string will be underneath that, but it won't tell you who's responsible for not releasing that information. And that's kind of the challenge, is that there are a lot of different tools out there that attempt to do a static analysis. They just try to look through the heap dump, and they try to aggregate the information and just print out, here is where the heap leak is. And there's varying amounts of success in that, but it's always, a lot of times what they'll tell you is, you know, Java Lang string is the cause of your leak, but it won't give you enough data that you can't traverse or interact with that heap analysis or that tree and find out, you know, why Java Lang string is like that, or who's holding all these Java Lang strings. So I would definitely say or repeat that the heap analyzer tool is definitely the one that's preferred by the support team, the one that we have the most success with. But it doesn't have static analysis, but it does a very good job of identifying leak suspects. So once you load it up and you go to leak suspects, unfortunately, I know it's not it's a GUI solution, not a command line one that you're looking for, but you know, that's probably the most effective. The getting things done on the command line and getting it just to print out like a histogram is just unfortunately not an effective way to determine the root cause.
The static analysis is sometimes useful whenever you know exactly what object you're looking for. For example, if you know certain object might be growing, then static statistics would be very helpful. Otherwise, and usually you will see a bunch of byte arrays and strings and taking over most of Java heap.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question comes from Priyanka. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Priyanka. My question is, can proper settings of caching size and in-memory session count reduce the out-of-memory issues which we see commonly? And if yes, what parameters we should take into consideration while setting this from WebSphere console?
So, Priyanka, if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is you got an out-of-memory error, and heap dump analysis show that most of the heap is being consumed by this session object and the cache size. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the default value is 1,000 sessions in memory, and anything after that, they get serialized. Now, it also depends on how big these HTTP session objects are within your application. You can definitely limit that depending on how much memory is being consumed in the heap dump. If you see large objects, I would say reduce the session size in memory. And it's in one of the web container properties.
Yeah. And I have one more question. When we get these out-of-memory issues which are because of some application code error, which log files we should concentrate on?
Okay, I think this is one of the questions we covered earlier. Again, it depends what kind of out-of-memory you're getting into. There are typically two types, Java heap and native heap. Majority of the time, I think you're running into Java heap. And if it is a Java heap, a Java current heap dump is automatically generated on an out-of-memory condition. And if you take a look at that, you should know that, or you can send it to support and we'll analyze those files and identify where the leak is coming from.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our final question comes from Nassar Rashan. Your line is open.
The question is, how do you relate the native memory to the physical memory? And if you have enough of physical memory, what's the limit? Also, and if you remove the no class GC, wouldn't you suffer performance? And what are the pros and cons of using the switch? Thanks.
The native memory limit is still going to be based on your process address size. So if you're using 32-bit, you can only access 2 to the 30-bit addresses. So that's going to be your big restriction with native memory. If you are 64-bit, then the address space is huge. It's 2 to the power 64. So you're probably not worried about your native footprint in 32. The no class GC, that's going to stop classes from getting garbage collected. Now, that may have a performance impact, but probably not. The classes that get garbage collected are ones that haven't been used in a while, so you're probably not going to use them. Now, it's potential that you could later on load the same one, but it's unlikely. The real problem we have here is when we start using Java Reflection, because Java Reflection will reflect on a class and create new classes that only get used once. These reflected classes never, ever, ever get used again. So if we've told the JVM not to garbage collect classes, these ones are going to stay alive for the entire run of the JVM. And since it's an app server, I mean, it could be months that it's up. And this class will never get used. So that's when we start seeing issues with the no class GC, is if we start having Java Reflection being used.
On the physical versus native issue, if you have enough physical memory, can't you go beyond a gig and a half?
Well, are you? We're referencing a 32-bit process when we say gig and a half. Are you referencing a 32-bit architecture or a 16-bit?
32-bit.
On a 32-bit, roughly you have, like Tom said, you basically have 4 gig of addressable space per process on a 32-bit system. Depending on the platform you're on, the system, like the actual kernel of the operating system, will take up, you know, somewhere a little bit under 2 gig of that. So you really only have about a 2 gig sandbox to play in for both heap and native. And that's just the limitation of the 32-bit architecture. Different platforms have different ways of, you know, reducing the kernel size and giving you a little bit more addressable space. But for this argument, let's just make it clean and say you have a 2 gig addressable space. Now, if you use 1.5 gig for heap, that only leaves 500 meg for native. If you use 1.8, which, you know, it may be possible to do, if you're running just a straight-up Java program with one thread and absolutely no native interface, you could probably even go up to 1.9 or 1.8 for your heap size. It's just not recommended to do that, because then if you take up that much physical, from a physical memory standpoint, you've only got those 2 gig. Now, if you've got 16 gig on your box, that doesn't matter, because each process can only access the 4 gig addressable space, whereas a good portion of it is taken up by the OS kernel. You still only have that 32-bit. This is why we have customers that look at 64-bit or 64-bit, you know, with compressed references as an architectural option, because they may have a need to go to a larger process size. Once you go to that, then you're looking more at your physical memory, because I think I don't know the number offhand, but the number, the largest potential theoretical heap size or process size for 64-bit is well beyond what anybody's hardware is going to be right
16
now.
16 terabytes.
Yeah, I think it's 16 terabytes is the potential theoretical maximum process size. Now, there are some differences. When you go to 64-bit, you are going to see a performance drop, and the larger the heap, the harder it is to maintain. You're going to have longer and longer GC cycles and other issues. So you can pass the point of diminishing return just by saying, instead of having 8, you know, 1 gig processes, I'm going to have one huge process. You're oftentimes going to be better off from a performance perspective to scale to multiple 32-bit JVMs or multiple smaller JVMs than you would with one just enormous JVM. So I hope that answers the question, but if you're looking at 32-bit, it doesn't matter how much memory you physically have, you're simply restricted by the fact that a 32-bit process only has that small amount of addressable space.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. And we have no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Jackie. I do see a question here coming from the group chat by a gentleman named Nazer, so I'm going to announce a question verbally over the phone, and then hopefully our panel of experts will be able to answer the question. So here we go. The question goes like this. Can you explain the difference between heap memory, native memory, and server physical memory?
I think that's the same question we just had, but I'm going to just reiterate it real quick, is that you have, and I'm going to start by saying that your physical memory is how much memory you have on the actual server. So if you have a piece of hardware and it has 8 gig of physical memory, that's you know, how many SIMs or DIMMs you have in there. And then the heap versus native is within each running process. The heap is where the JVM is the Java virtual machine. It's where the Java code is executing. And the native is both, you know, anything that runs in C, which also includes the underlying JVM internals that are used to interface with the operating system for, like, network connections, things like that. Hope that answers the question.
At this point in time, I would like to move on to slide number 28 and pass the presentation to Giri for a summary of today's session.
Thank you, Joseph. Just a quick recap on what we discussed today. First, we discussed the symptoms of Java heap and native memory and how to differentiate them. Next, we went over the must-gather documentation required to debug these out-of-memory issues. We also talked about heap analyzer tool to process a heap dump and the different ways to find leak suspects in a heap dump. On the native memory side, we covered the sequence of steps required to isolate the native memory issue. Lastly, we touched on some of the most common memory suspects we see in WebSphere. Now I turn this over back to Joseph. Thank you.
Thank you, Giri, for a great summary. At this point in time, we will conclude the OpenMind session.